Parshasav. So we, the first thing we start off with is there's a big machlokas. How many pesukim are in this week's parsha? So if you look at the end of the parsha, the very, very end, it also has a simen. So it says tzadi vav. There are 96 pesukim. Tzav simen. The simen is tzav. So it works out well because the name of the parsha is tzav. There's 96 pesukim. So the simen, the way to remember it is tzav. Okay, that's a very easy way to remember it. Problem is, if you count it up, you'll count 97. You'll get 97 psukim altogether. You're not going to see 96. So there's a pasuk off. So what's going on here? What's going on with this with the simen? When the simen is a little bit off and when the psukim are there. So the idea is the following. First of all, you should know I got tested on this once. When I first got married, I was by downtown. I was where my father-in-law was. My father-in-law was challenged by somebody who was modern to the extreme, that he could ask me questions on the parsha that I would never know the answer to. Never know the answer to. So my father-in-law said, of course he's going to know the answer to it. He'll answer all your questions. He'll answer everything, right? So the guy asked me, how many words are in the parsha? How many letters are there in the parsha? How many? Not a clue. Not a clue.
Did he know?
Also not a clue. Yeah, because he looked it up.
It's probably pretty...
Like,
well,
one of those things. Of course. Like, went into it. He said it. Yeah, he set me up, basically. He set me up. But he asked me one question, which was, how many psukim are there in the parsha? And I said, 96, but some say 97. He said, no, it says in my thing, 97. I said, that's because you don't believe in Masorah. What's the pshat? The pshat is that we have a Masorah. This is given down from generation to generation. There are 96 psukim inside this parsha, even though there actually are 97. If you count them up, there's 97. There's a pasuk here that we're messed up on. We don't know what pasuk it is. We have no idea which pasuk it is. But there's a mess up in this parsha. But the simen and the Masorah is that there's 96 psukim. Why? What's this 96 psukim? What's the idea behind it? So here we go. Yalkut Reuveni says the following thing. Yalkut Reuveni says, there's a klipa, there's a demon when it comes to working. When a person does work, that klipa, that demon, is called tzav. Chazal say this following line, Ein tzav elo lashon avodah zarah, that whenever the word tzav is being used, it refers to avodah zarah. Because if you command badly, if you command wrongly, then it becomes something that has to do with avodah zarah. That's the idea behind that. Ein tzav elo lashon avodah zarah. These powers of tuma get their unika. They pull in all their power from the names of God that are known as Aleph Lamed El and Aleph Dalet Nun Yud Adonoi. That's where they get their powers from. El is 31. Adonoi is 65. 31 plus 65 is
96.
There you go. Kel Adnos is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that gives the power over to this demon that's known as Tzav. Your Yetzer Hara wants you to work for the wrong reasons. Your Yetzer Hara wants you to be like Mitzrayim. What do they do in Mitzrayim? I just found, by the way, there's a whole person that... They say that the Jews never built the pyramids. Why? Because the pyramids were built about 1,200 years earlier, before the Jews ever came down to Mitzrayim. That's the line that they say.
What?
Because the pyramids were around, right? That would be pretty cool to have. But it doesn't describe anything from Mitzrayim. It doesn't say a single thing about anything in Mitzrayim. But regardless, I just saw another, there's a brand new thing that's coming out trying to explain how archaeology fits in with the Torah completely, and that our dates are off. And this, anyway, we're off in a couple things. He goes into this entire thing how if you take away this and that and whatever it is, and we understand it in a different way, the Jews were the ones who built the pyramids. And they were built by slaves. And we were the ones who ended up building them. Pison Ramses, which were storage houses, were massive pyramids. There's a whole big thing about that. We're not going to get into that right now. We're not going to go into all the details and whether or not, you know, whether or not this is true or not. It is a little bit of a stretch. It's a very, very big stretch. You know what the pshat? Yeah, that they built something like that. But the pshat that we know by the malacha that the Jews did in Mitzrayim was that they built things that kept breaking. They kept falling down because they built it on swamps and then they just fell down again. Then they got it built itself up and fell down again. They were doing work, yes. It's brought down that they were doing work that did nothing for them. You know, like, I told guys this. At the end of a Zman, at the end of like 6 months, if you came out from an entire Zman and you don't have any notes from the learning that you've done, You came out with nothing. You came out with absolutely nothing. It doesn't look like you accomplished anything. If you come out with a notebook full of things, even if the notebook is full of songs that you wrote down by heart from your iPod, it still means you did something during that time. It shows that you accomplished something. The idea behind Sav and the idea of what we're talking about is the klipa of Sav is there to make you do work that makes you feel like you've accomplished nothing your entire life. To make you feel like you've done absolutely nothing your entire life. And it takes you away and makes you feel like garbage. It makes you feel like absolute garbage. So what do? So we make you have results. We made the people build a Mishkan, make a real Mishkan after going to Mitzrayim and building nothing and nothing and nothing and nothing. Then we made them take them out of Mitzrayim and made them build up a Mishkan, make them build up a real Mishkan, and then make them build one thing after the other, and then all of a sudden we got our El Adonai, we got our Adon back, our master back, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought everything back for us. We started doing things for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then we're metaking that by bringing Korbanos, which is this week's parsha, and showing the Kohanim, what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to work at in order to improve yourself, to make things better? Not so it's non-accomplished or nothing ends up happening. To do something that means something to everybody. That's what the Kohanim were doing in the Beis Hamikdash. It wasn't just busy work. It wasn't just nothing work where they were running around with like meat and wine and pouring this and grabbing blood and doing. What did it mean? They wanted them to accomplish something. They wanted them to do something. And that's the idea behind what the Tzav Klipa was and how we were able to fight it. Okay, what do we do nowadays? Obviously, we don't have any korbanos. We don't have any tzav. The Kohanim don't do it. So now, what do? So tefillah is the famous answer that we daven. But there's another answer. Parshas HaKorbanos. You know, if you read through the parsha, it says, if you got those korbanos. What do you think that means, Ellie? No, come on. What do you think it means? You think it means you just read through the parsha. I just read right over here. Nevesh b'sechetom alam al b'ashem v'chichish b'misom. And all of a sudden, I brought up a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbeinu Bechaya knocks it down, just destroys it. Says it has nothing to do with reading through a parsha. Reading through the little psukim and just saying it means nothing. That does absolutely nothing for you. You know what you got to do? You got to think about it. You have to understand it. You have to go through and make chidushim on this parshas HaKorbanos. Go through parshas HaKorbanos. Learn zvachim. Learn menachos. Learn all the different mesechtas that there are out there, all about the korbanos. Come out with unbelievable ideas and try to understand it really clearly. To go through it and say, oh, this is why this happens. And then all of a sudden, yizgala eini sichlo. You'll start to understand it and you'll start to say to yourself, oh, maybe that's the reason why there's a korban ola. And maybe that's the reason why there's a korban chatas. Then you'll start understanding why there's this and why there's that. You'll start going through all the different things. You'll start putting things together, start building blocks, so to speak. And then when you get that, then automatically you'll understand the concept of what I need to do in order to bring a korban nowadays. Because the whole point behind an ola is dot, dot, dot. Therefore, nowadays what I can do is dot, dot, dot. And that'll be the exact same thing as me bringing a korban ola. You have to sit there and you got to think about it and you have to understand it and realize what's going on here and what I'm supposed to do in order for it to work. So too, you've heard the Maimer Chazal. It's in Brachos. If you say Ashrei three times a day, what do you get as? Come on, Ashrei three times a day. It's not a candy. Anybody? Olam Haba. You get Olam Haba. Ashrei three times a day, you get Olam Haba. Says, how could that be? Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, you have to understand what Ashrei means. Do you realize what Ashrei is? Praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the great things that God has given us, and then saying Parnasa, 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 HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us everything, and that everything will be okay, and there won't be any problems. Do you realize what that is? Do you realize what that's saying? It's literally like saying, this is what it is. It's taking my wallet, throwing it on the ground, and saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me whatever you need.
If you
give me whatever I need, basically. That's instead of just saying it, it means understanding what it means to say Ashrei three times a day. Not just to say Ashrei three times a day, but to mean it when I say it. To realize, wow, there's a lot to what Ashrei is going. What's going on in Ashrei? Did you know, by the way, the Zion in Ashrei? If there's a person that you know that's not on the derech, that's not learning correctly, that's not, let's just say he's not keeping Shabbos, the Zion in Ashrei, Zecher Rav Tuv Chayabiyu V'Sikaskha Yoraneinu, if you concentrate hard during that pasuk, that person can go back on the derech. Even though Yerushalayim is beyond anything, it's the Zion when it comes to ASHRAE, has a tremendous, tremendous power. And if you see somebody who's a little bit off, this is the way to help them. This is the way to do it, by saying that Zecher Rav Tuvcha Yaviv is a kasuf by Yohananu. That's the way to do it. There's nothing like it. Did you know by any koi lecha yisaberu, you're supposed to take out your tzitzis and stare at the tzitzis in the front? You're supposed to take your tzitzis out and stare at your tzitzis. Put them in front of you and see what I'm looking at. There's so many parts. Either one. It depends on, you know, ASHRAE and Mincha. You don't necessarily have a talus. But you take whatever it is out there and you just look at it. Each part of ASHRAE is a brand new thing. Do you realize the difference between Karov Hashem Lechol Karov, God is close to whoever calls out to Him. Ritzon Yorev Yaseh, those who fear Him, He does their will. Shomer Hashem Es Kol Avav, those who love Him. There's like three different levels over here. There's three totally different levels in ASHRAE. What's going on here? If you start understanding ASHRAE, that's when you start getting Olam Haba. Because you'll realize all the wonders that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for you, and you'll say, wow, that's what I'm really saying when I say ASHRAE. It's the most unbelievable tefillah, but nobody ever pays attention to it. Because it's more of a challenge, how quickly can I say it? Especially when it gets to ASHRAE Yuval Tzion. How quickly could I do it and still get away with saying ASHRAE? And Posech Zidecha, you open up your hands, and that's it. You know, you get your hands open, and you get that out there, and that's about it. It's totally off. The Kli Yakar says, regarding Parshas HaKorbanos, that each one of the Korbanos stands for one of the Parshas, one of the Sfarim of the Torah. Bereishis Shmos Vayikra Bamidbar Dvarim. Bereishis Shmos Vayikra Bamidbar Dvarim stands for the Ola, Shlomim, Chatos, Asham, and Mincha. That each one of them represents one of the books of the Torah. Which means that when I bring a Korban, it's Ki'ilu I learn the entire Sefer of either Bereishis Shmos Vayikra Bamidbar Dvarim. It's Kilo, I learned the entire thing. I got the entire thing down. So let's explain how. The Kli Yakar says the following. So he says that number one, Bereishis. Bereishis stands for a Korban Ola. The reason why it's a Korban Ola is because what do you have in Bereishis? People dying, the entire Mabul. And then Sodom being absolutely destroyed. The Avos willing to give their lives over for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ola is an entirely burnt offering to God, where everything goes to God. When it comes to Bereishis, everything is going to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything is moving up to Hashem. The Avos were willing to give up their lives to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, especially Yitzchak Avinu, as we saw, was willing to give up his life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's number one, that's the Ola. Shmo stands for a Mincha. The reason why a Mincha, and this is a really weird one, because with the Korban Mincha came matzah. Matzah was brought with it. And matzah, we know, is the entire... That's what Shmos stands for. When Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they were eating matzah when they were there and they were poor. They eat it when they left, and they kept it when they were out there, and then it ended up becoming the man. So that mincha, which was a flour offering, that flour is what we're referring to. That's a reference, I guess you can say, to Parsha Shmos. Vayikor Zachatos. Because we needed a kapara, we needed an atonement for the ego azov, and that's all Vayikor. Vayikor is telling us how to be atoned for the ego azov. To do this, to do that, and that's the Korban Chatos. Bamidbor is a Korban Asham. Anybody know what a Korban Asham is? What the Korban Asham is? It is like a Chatos sin offering, but it's more specific. It's more specific. There are different things. There's an Asham Vada, an Asham Taloi, there's a Suffolk. An Asham is guilt. It literally means a guilt offering. Because in the desert, in Bamidbor, goes through all the mistakes that Bnei Yisrael made when they were in the desert. The complaints that they had, the stupid things that they did, the Meraglim are there, Korach is there, Memeriva is there, all the stupid mistakes that were there that happened during that time, the Lashon Hara that was spoken, the fact that they ran away from Har Sinai, the Mislonim, all those people were right there. Because of that, the Korban Asham represents every guilt, every little bit of guilt that Bnei Yisrael did when they were in the desert. Tevarim is Shlomim. Why? Because that's the Shlemus of Klal Yisrael. At that point, that's where Klal Yisrael became a full nation, Shalem to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ready to go inside Eretz Yisrael. And the only person who wasn't ready to go inside Eretz Yisrael was Moshe Rabbeinu. But everybody else was Shalem. Everybody else was full. There was complete Shlemus for them at the end of the 40 years, and that's why the Shlemim stands for Devarim. But I'll tell you a Gemara on Shabbos. And I'll tell you why this is not such an easy word to be able to say. Shabbos Yud Aleph Amid Aleph says Rabbi Yishmael did a chait. He accidentally did something. And he wrote down on a piece of paper that when Mashiach comes, I'm going to bring a chatos. A fat chatos. I'm going to bring a fattened chatos. So that's what the Gemara says, that he wrote it down that he's going to bring it. So what the Rishonim ask in Rabbi Yishmael is, why wouldn't he just read over Parshas Korbanos? You don't need to bring a korban. We have the ability to bring a korban right now by reading through the parshas and by understanding it and by getting everything down and by making chidushim. Rabbi Shmuel had the ability to make chidushim. So why would he have to go through this whole process of writing it down and in the future I'll go bring a korban? Do something right now. Why couldn't he do something right then and there? Pick himself up and say, I'm going to go learn korbanos until I come up with a chidush and I'm going to go ahead and write a chidush. Wouldn't that be the most obvious thing to do? That would be the best thing to do. That way you wouldn't have to worry about it. Can you imagine like this little thing? Rabbi Shmuel didn't live to see a Beis HaMikdash. What did he have? This little piece of paper in his pocket for the rest of his life? Then at the end of his life, he didn't do anything. He didn't bring a korban. So what did he do? So one answer that's given is, even though you got a kapara, but you didn't give a chilek to the Kohen. The Kohen needs something. You need something from the korban. And the Kohen didn't get that chilek when you learned Parshas HaKorbanos. The Kohen got nothing. Because he didn't give anything over to the Kohen. He just learned and he got everything out. What?
That's his explanation.
That's his explanation.
Go tell your Kiddush to the Kohen.
The Kohen will get it and then I'll actually give him something. The problem is that can't be. Because Rabbi Yishmael himself was a Kohen. So if Rabbi Yishmael himself was a Kohen, he wouldn't have to give a portion to the Kohen. He would have been able to eat it himself. He would be able to take it himself. He doesn't have to give it over to anybody else. So that can't be the actual reason. What's the pshat? Maybe the pshat is that when he's writing it down on that piece of paper using the Rabbeinu Bahaya, what he means by writing it down on the piece of paper, what he was writing down was a chiddush that he had written up regarding Parshas HaKorbanos. And this is the whole thing. He might have even written this pshat. It might be that this is the whole thing, that if you learn Parshas HaKorbanos and you come out with a chiddush, then that counts as if you brought the actual korban. And that's what he wrote down. He didn't just write down that I owe a fattened chatas. It was this chiddush that he wrote down inside the sefer. It was this chiddush that he had put inside there. And that was the idea of what he was putting inside there. He wasn't just writing something. He was writing exactly what he wanted out of that. Okay, we have a korban olah. Does anybody notice Parshas Vayikra, Aaron's name isn't mentioned once. There's Bnei Aaron, the sons of Aaron, all over the place. Bnei Aaron, Bnei Aaron, Bnei Aaron. Elazar and Itamar are mentioned. But Aaron's name isn't mentioned once by himself. But in this week's Parsha, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lamor, Tzavis Aaron, thus Banav Lamor. Starts with Aaron and then Banav. First question is, why wasn't Aaron's name mentioned throughout all of Parshas Vayikra? And all of a sudden, starts off this parsha, Aaron's name is mentioned for the first time. That's number one. Number two, Zos Torah Sa'ola. This is the Torah of the Ola. He Ola al Mokdal Mizbeach Ola Ilad Aboker. It is the Ola that is brought up on the fire, on the Mizbeach, all night long until the morning. Ve'ishim Mizbeach Tukadbo. And the fire of the Mizbeach will burn on it all day long. So it's going to be burned all day and all night long, and it's going to take a long time for it to be burnt up. Because it's a huge cow. Can you imagine taking a huge cow and putting it on a fire, just saying, alright, we're going to wait. We're gonna let this thing burn. It was a huge cow, or a sheep, or a goat. You see, it was an absolutely huge thing. Now, sure, they stripped it. They took off the skin. But aside from the skin, it was it's all bones. All. Have you ever tried burning a bone?
Yes.
How long did it take you to burn it? Until it became ashes. Okay, that was a lie. 3 hours? How hot was that?
Accurate. It was hotter than the furnace in hell.
Okay. I didn't know Yossi was here today.
What?
No, it's all good.
Why are you laughing?
It's all good. But regardless,
which part should you say his name wasn't mentioned?
Aaron. Oh, Parshas Vayikra. In Vayikra. Yeah, I mean, it was mentioned in Vayikra. It was only mentioned in Tzav. So the second question is, why do we start off with an actual Ola? Why do we bring up the Ola before anything else? Something that was burned all night long on the Mizbeach, which obviously would take a long time. What was the point with starting with an Ola? Okay, so here we go. Vayikra is all about information. Vayikra is information, one after the other. If you want to do this, then you bring this. And if a guy sins this way, then he does that. And if he does this, it goes on one after the other, just information. Just literally like throwing stuff at you. You did this, okay, then you're going to get this. You did that, then you're going to get this. That's all it does. And it's not telling you a process or what the Kohanim necessarily have to do. It is what the person who sinned has to bring. If he sinned in thought, then he brings an Ola. If he sinned in deed, in action, then he has to bring either a Chatos or an Asham. If he wants to bring a peace offering, a thanksgiving offering, then he brings a Shlomen. If he can't afford it, then there's a Mincha that he can bring. There's all these different things of what you have to do. But that was not this week's parsha. That was last week's parsha. Parsha's Tzav is literally a tzivoy. The whole parsha is about commanding Aaron and the Kohanim what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to live their lives, what they're supposed to do for the rest of their lives. How are you supposed to act? So listen to how it goes. Rav Schwab says, what is the bracha that Kohanim make by Birchas Kohanim? That all Kohanim make? Baruch Ato Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kiddushanu, B'Kedushaso Shel Aaron, V'Tzivanu Levarech Hasamo Yisrael B'Ahava. Now that's strange. It's not Asher Kiddushanu V'Mitzvah V'Tzivanu, and you should know, it's the only bracha, the only bracha that is an Asher Kiddushanu V'Mitzvah V'Tzivanu bracha, where we switch around Asher Kiddushanu V'Mitzvah V'Tzivanu. Because look how it says it, Asher Kiddushanu, V'Kedushaso Shel Aaron, V'Tzivanu. Well, what is that? We never have a bracha like that. There's no other bracha like that. You know why? Because every Kohen gets their Kiddusha from Aaron. Every Kohen gets everything they have from Aaron. And if Aaron doesn't have a certain amount of Kiddusha, then his kids will never have that Kiddusha. Aaron, what's the word? I don't have the word. I was trying to think of it earlier today and I can't. Bears, borns, gives birth to within his kids, his spiritual DNA goes through to his children. I'm sorry? Instills within himself. Somebody said that word earlier also. I don't like that word though. It's more like you bring it in, you're giving birth to it almost. You're letting your kids have this spiritual DNA. They can never let go of it. They're automatically holy. There's no Kohen that isn't intrinsically holy. And so holy, this holiness stems straight from Aaron. Straight from Aaron. There is no stop. There's no stoppage right in the middle.
What about Rufus?
Even there were certain people who had to gain that holiness by doing something. Because they weren't born into the good. They were born before that status of where Aaron was able to give it down to his kids. But Aaron had that ability to give it down to every one of his future progeny who were called Kohanim. Who were called those people that were the priests of Klal Yisrael. And it all came through him. He was the Be'er, the well, that gave birth to all the waters of all the Kohanim from then on. And that's why Tzav is command Aaron, for not only for him, but for Banav Achrav. And says Rashi, Ein Tzav Eloshen Zeruz Miyad Uledoros, for him and for all future generations. Because Aaron stands for everybody from then on. There's nothing else. And the Zrizus that Kohanim have, the fact that Kohanim Zrizinhein, that they're always known is quick and hurried and they always want to do the right thing, it all comes from Aaron. Because everything is B'Kedushas So Shel Aaron. They're different from everybody else. The mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim is totally different by Kohanim than it is for anybody else. Even if we think as Yisrael that we would do the exact same job, we would do the exact same thing, we're wrong. We're wrong. Have you ever tried holding your hands out like this for 5 minutes? For them, it's not hard. It's fine. But for them, it's not supposed to be hard. The Kedushas Shel Aaron, the holiness of Aaron, should be able to make it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking through them and projecting himself to all of Klal Yisrael. A regular Yisrael can't do it. As much as you think you have the power to do it, you don't have the power to do it. You can't do it. You're just not that holy. That's the difference between us. That's the difference between us and Aaron HaKohen. And that's what Rav Schwab was trying to say, that this is what Tzav is all about. That Aaron is totally different from us. Yeah, by Yikos, all the Jews, you did this, you did this, you did that. By the Kohanim, you have a whole separate parsha where Aaron is in charge. And Aaron is the guy who's doing everything. So why is the Ola first? So the Rabbeinu Bachaya gives a bunch of different answers. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says, Ki Ola, the fact that it goes straight to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning it's put on a fire and everything goes to God as opposed to anything else, so it's the holiest of all korbanos. It also shows that I owe God everything while God owes me nothing. The idea is that I give everything I have to God, I give the entire korban to God, while God doesn't owe me a single thing. I don't need to have one little thing from God. That's the second thing. Number three, it shows us what happens to Rishayim in Gehenna. That the Rishayim will be consumed as an Esh Tamid in Gehenna, and they'll be sitting in fires for all time. Whether or not that applies to Jews, that's a different story. And number four, it's Machapa for Machshava, for thoughts. There's nothing else that is such a kapara for thoughts. But let's think for a second, and now we're going to pull in Aaron together with this. It's Machapa for thoughts. How in the world, how does this work? Let's say the Beis Hamikdash is around today. We're all living in Yerushalayim. And all of a sudden I say to myself, oh man, I really want to kill that guy. I should say, I'm driving around Yerushalayim. Everybody, everybody here has been to Yerushalayim before? I think everybody has, right? You haven't, Mick. You're going to be there soon. Don't worry. But we're probably in 4 to 5 days. 4 or 5 days. 4 to 5 days. Give me that amount of time.
Right.
But either way, when we all go to Yerushalayim, you will notice I don't think the driving is going to get any better there. Driving does not get any better. The train, yeah. It's going to be great soon. But the driving doesn't get any better there. And driving can really get you upset. It can get you upset. You're driving around a little bit, and then all of a sudden there's cars like, you know, the Israeli who like cuts in front of you. The Israeli just crashes into your car and then goes the other way. You know, the Israeli, people walking wherever they want to go. Just, you can get upset. You can get really, really upset. And you can start saying, you know, you can start yelling out loud and say, like, what's wrong with you? How are you doing? You can just start screaming. If I say one bad thing to another person, like, I'm going to kill you. Or if I speak Lashon Hara about that person later. Or even if I just think about it. I'm chayiv in a korban ola. I'm chayiv to take an entire korban and give it over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and burn it to God. Without doing anything else.
What do people do? I mean, it's a fortune. I don't understand.
An absolute fortune. Yeah, that's basically what I'm asking.
There is no sin.
It costs an absolute fortune. You're 100% right. There is no official sin. But a korban ola is brought for machshavas. Now, you are not required. You can save up an ola. It's not like a chatas, where a chatas has to be given for every bad deed that you did. An ola can be done for all these bad thoughts that I had in one day, or in 1 week, or even in 1 month. You just got to give a bigger korban. But it's still, it's ridiculous. Every time that I have a bad thought, I go ahead and I give it. And think about this. When I'm giving the korban ola, I'm go ahead and I'm sacrificing the korban ola, and I give it over to the kohen. If I sit there for 1 second while I'm giving it, I'm like, oh, this guy's for sure going to mess it up. Right there, I'm hiving another korban ola. I'm hiving a brand new korban ola. I just messed up again. So what kind of, it's the most unbelievable thing. And that's why there was a chisaron kiss involved. It was such a loss of money, because people were, as soon as they were bringing a korban ola, they might have to bring another one. They might have to bring a third one after that. So I don't get it. The machshava is unbelievable, but why are we starting off with that more than anything else? So the Ben Ish Chai says an unbelievable thing, because it goes the opposite way as well. And he says the following. When Aaron tried to calm down the Jews by Egel Azov, what did he do? Everybody knows he took their gold, right? He tried delaying the time, but regardless, they took the gold, threw it inside a big pile. And afterward, what ended up happening? We know the Erev Rav got a hold of him. There was some magic involved. And a golden calf came out and came out of the fire. And the people started to say, oh, there's our God. These are your gods. What did Aaron do? What did Aaron do?
He tried to postpone it again.
What did he do before that? Before he tried postponing and said Chag LaHashem Machor, he said a Chag for Hashem is tomorrow. What did he do?
Yeah, he cried or something.
Mm-mm. He built something. Built a Mizbeach. Okay, making the Egel Azov, everybody understands. Everybody looks at it and says, yeah, it wasn't his choice. He didn't do it on purpose. Everybody understands that Aaron did not mean to make an Egel Azov. We all understand that. Why did he make a Mizbeach? What in the world was he thinking? This is the Ben Ish Chai's question. What was even the Havamina? You look at the pasuk and you just sit there and you say to yourself, what in the world is going on? All of a sudden he just sits there and he says, Vayichal Moshe, it says right over here, Vayar Aaron, Aaron saw the Egel Azov, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanov, and he built a Mizbeach in front of the Egel Azov. Vayiko Aaron, Vayomer, he called out and he said, Chag LaHashem Machor, there will be a holiday for Hashem tomorrow. What in the world is going on? What was he thinking?
That motion is going to come and they're going to be
removed. But the Mizbeach wasn't necessary. You could just say Chag LaHashem Machor. You didn't have to build a Mizbeach for it.
You had to bring a Chag.
No, he didn't have to bring anything for it necessarily. They still had other Mizbeachos. He didn't have to build a brand new Mizbeach lefanov, in front of the Egel Azov. See, here we go. So he says an unbelievable answer. He says a mashal. There's a prince that got lost in the forest. A prince got lost. He has no idea where he is. And a bunch of robbers catch him. The robbers see him, and the robbers say, oh, let's grab this guy, we'll kill him, and we'll take all his money. One of the robbers says, you know what, I'll take care of him. You know, and that way, if we get caught, we won't say that we ever saw the prince. I'll blame it on myself. I'll be the one that goes in front. So the prince grabs the, the robber grabs the prince, brings him to a secluded part of the forest. And says to him, I'm not going to kill you. I have enough respect for the king that I'm not going to kill you. get out of here, but give me all your money. I want all your money. So the prince gave him all his money, everything they had in his pockets, his watches, everything he had, gave it over to the robber. And the prince said to the robber, can you help me out of the forest? The robber said, no, I'm not helping you out. You're going to have to find your own way out. So the robber went away. The prince eventually found his way back. It took him a while, but he ended up finding his way back. He found his way back to the palace. When the king heard what had happened, that the robbers had caught him, he went into the forest with all of his guards, and he found all those robbers. And he got the robber that the prince said, oh, it was that guy. And he said to the robber, you're going to die for capturing the prince. You're going to die for capturing the prince, but first I'm going to cut your arms off. I'm going to cut your arms off for stealing all the prince's stuff. So the robber, as they were about to cut his hands off, cut his arms off, as they were about to do that, he started yelling out, my heart, my heart. So they started looking at him saying, your heart? Say your hands. What's wrong with your heart? So he said, my heart is killing me. It had such mercy on your child and didn't want to kill your child. And I'm telling it right now that it was a bad move. It should have killed your child because then I never would have been found out about and then I would live. That's what the robber said. The king realized that this guy deserves more of a reward than a punishment for saving his son. And he said, fine, I'll let you go. He said, I'll let you go. What's the shot? Aaron saw what Bnei Yisrael was thinking. And Aaron realized that if he didn't do something, then Bnei Yisrael was going to do something much, much worse. So he took it upon himself to make a mizbeach before anybody in Klal Yisrael could make a mizbeach on their own. Yes, he had his own intentions. That when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, they'll sacrifice something different on this mizbeach. He wasn't making the mizbeach for the Egel Azov. He's making the mizbeach for some other reason, whatever it was. But he was doing it in front of the Egel Azov so that the people would think, ah, Aaron's on our side. So that it would look like he was doing the right thing. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Aaron, I can't believe you just did this, what will Aaron say back? I did it for you. I didn't want your children to be killed. I didn't want your children to do something stupid. I did it for you. I didn't care. I wasn't doing it to make him his bear. I could care less. That's what he's yelling outside. What does that teach us? It teaches us that the kavana behind what you're doing is the ikker. Sometimes people do things that are silly on the outside, but if the kavana is right, it could still be a good thing. And it could go the opposite way. Sometimes people can do a very, very bad thing on the a very good thing on the outside. But if their kavana is bad, then the whole thing is shot. It's like they didn't do anything at all. That's why we start off the entire parsha with Aaron and with an Olam. We tell Aaron, you're the one who made that mizbeach. You're the one who's going to bring up the Korban Olam. You're the one who's going to be taking care of all this stuff. Because we see that you're the one who knows how to use his head for the right reasons. Who knows how to think things and have the right kavanas alev and to do the right things at the right time for the right people. Because if it wasn't for you, Klal Yisrael would have messed up and I would have had to kill him. Much more than just 600 of them or 3,000 of them. There would have been a lot more than just the deaths that they actually had. Machshava is the ikar. And that's the reason why we start off the parsha with the Ola. To tell you that the kavana behind what you do is the ikar. To think clearly. Whether it's a good deed or a bad deed. Think of a good reason as to why you're doing it. If you can't think of a good reason, then don't do it. If you can't put on tefillin in the morning and think of a good reason for why you're putting on tefillin other than my dad is making me, then you got a problem. You have an issue. Find something else. Find something else that works. Get another reason for why I have to go ahead and do this. And that'll lead to the Chassam Sofer, which will end this off. Unbelievable Chassam Sofer, and it goes... It's funny, I found that Rav Wolfson has an affinity with the Chassam Sofer. He has almost a replica of this vort in the Amunas Yitacha. Almost an entire... It's just almost the exact same thing. Chassam Sofer says an unbelievable thing. Okay. Shachris Mincha Marif. Okay, some say Avos Tiknum. Can I get an Avos Tiknum? This is Chav Zayinim Abez and Brachos. Some people say, can I get a Temidim Tiknum? In other words, for the Korbanos. Shachris is what Korban? What Korban? The Tamid Shal Shacharis. The Tamid Shal Shacharis. And it stands for which one of the others? Avram Avinu, right? Okay, so that's Avram Avinu, Tamid Shal Shachar. Tamid Shal Shachar, you had to bring it every morning? It was a Chiv. Chiv to bring every morning. Okay. Mincha is what Korban? The what? Tal Mitchell Ben Arbayim. Is that a chova? Chiyuv, you got to bring it. And who is that for? What of? Yitzchak. Okay. Mariv is what korban? It's not even a korban. Fats in the limbs that were burning on the mizbeach all night long. Is that a chiyuv? No. If there are fats and limbs to burn, then they burn them. And who's the av for that? Yaakovinu. Sesach Sam Sofer. Yaakovinu is shlemus. He's perfection. He stands for the greatest, the Mufchar Shabbos, the chosen one among all the Avos. So the question is, why would the best of the Avos have a tefillah that's only a Rishus? It's only, if you want to bring it, you can bring it. But it's not a Chiyuv. Wouldn't he have the Chiyuv? His Korban should have been the one that's, you have to have it. Because he's the greatest. He should have the Korban that, if not for this Korban, the whole world would be destroyed. That should be the Korban that he should have. So why in the world is Yaakovinu, does he get the Korban? It's not even a Korban. It's just limbs and fats burning on top of the Mizbeach. And it's Mariv. Why are we giving him the time? We're giving him like the worst one. What are we thinking? What are we giving him over here? Give him the Ilah. The Ilah is nice. We don't give him anything. We give him Mariv. What's Mariv? Chovas HaLevavos says there's two different types of avodah. Two different types of serving God. Doing it because I have to, or doing it because I want to. Doing it because I have to, or doing it because I want to. Doing something because you have to doesn't show your love. So Tomas Shal Shacharis, Tomas Shal Ben Arbayim, Shacharis and Mincha, I have to do those. It's a chiyuv. It's a chiyuv. That doesn't show my love. That shows me I'm just doing what I got to do. I have a requirement. I got to go to work. So if I go to work one day, can you imagine, like, my boss comes up to me, I go to work one day, and he just says to me, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming to work today. I was supposed to come to work today. It's like, it's an expectation. I have a chiyuv to come to work. If I don't come to work, I get in trouble. You don't thank me for doing something which I'm chayiv to do. But if I stay overtime for no reason, I'm not even getting paid for it. If I stay for an extra hour or two to work on other things, if I do a little bit more than what's necessary, that shows me how much I love work, or how much I value the work, we'll call it. The fact that the Kohanim stayed up all night when they didn't have to. They didn't have to stay up all night. But they stayed up all night with a little fork, turning over the meat on top of the mizbeach to make sure that it burned completely. And they weren't eating any of it. They weren't allowed to eat any of those limbs or fats. It wasn't like they could take a little bit and eat some. They couldn't. They stood there with a huge fork, overturning it all night long. They stayed up all night long. All night long. To do the Evarim and the Bedarim, it showed their love. It showed their Ava. It shows how much you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you do something like that. It shows how much you want to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So too by the Trumas Hadeshen, clearing out the ashes. How do they decide who is going to do the Trumas Hadeshen? What?
I forgot the name of it. They would like race each other.
They would race each other up there. Why didn't they do the lotteries? They didn't do lotteries. Why not do lotteries? Because the pshat was, you wanted the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen is not a chiyuv. It's cleaning up. You want to be a janitor? Run. Let's see how much you love me. Go show me how much you love me. Who's going to be there first? To the point where the people wanted to do it so badly, they loved God so much that there started to be fights. People were pushing other people over. And a guy actually broke his arm because they were running so quickly to clean up ashes, to clean up the garbage. Can you imagine? I have six brothers, obviously. A lot of them are here. Can you imagine if my mom called, like, who wants to take out the garbage? We're pushing each other out of the way, and like each one, like throwing each other out. It's ridiculous. But that shows how much you love something. Because if you run to it, that's going to show you how much you do it. And that shows Yaakov Avinu's love. That shows Yaakov Avinu's love. He's Mufchar Shavavos because he had the avoda at a time when he didn't have to do anything. At night, when he didn't have to daven. At a time when he didn't have to do anything. But you're going to spend your time doing something that you really want to do. Not that I have to do, but that I want to do. That shows how much you are. That's the pshat, Rav Wolfson says, behind the Medrash. The Talmidim asked Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, when is Mashiach coming? And Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma answered, you ready for this answer? Zos Torah Sa'ola. That was the answer. Zos Torah Sa'olam. What kind of an answer is that? Just tell me, 5769. Like, just give me a year. Give me a day. Erev Pesach. Oh, what the heck? Yud Nisan. That's fine. Just say, well, why not just tell me? Tell me a time. Tell me a certain time that works. Because the Choshech of Galus is the greatest avoda that you could possibly imagine. The Arizal told Reb Chaim Vital his neshama is a neshama from the Tanayim. It's from one of the Tanayim. Reb Chaim Vital also had a neshama from Chizkiyahu HaMelech. We have no shaykhus to stuff like that. But remember, the Arizal said, the avoda that you had when you were a Tana, it's the same as the avoda that you have now. He said, Reb Chaim Vital, I'm the same as a Tana? The Arizal said, no. You don't even come close to it. And the fingernail of a Tana, the clipping of a Tana, you don't come close to the type of avoda that a Tana could do. But God loves your avoda just as much as He loved the Tana's avoda. For people like us, sitting in America, you don't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes how hard it is for us? You don't think He realizes how hard it is to be able to walk in the streets here? To be able to go anywhere? He knows how hard it is. He realizes how hard it is. Our avoda kala, the one little bit that we can do, the one little turn of your head when it's something inappropriate or improper, is as great as the greatest Tana, as the greatest Tana doing the greatest avoda that you could possibly imagine. That's how great we are. The Chidush Yarim says it's possible that the time for Mashiach has already passed, that He was already supposed to come hundreds of years ago. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves our avoda so much, He doesn't want to let it go. He doesn't want to stop. He just wants it to keep going. We're doing so well. And this is the avoda that He loves more than anything else, that we're able to keep ourselves afloat. The fact that we're able to do that, and that's why Yaakov stands for this avoda. This is Shlemus, of us being able to sit in Gullus and be able to want to do something. That's Zos Torah Ola. The Torah of the Ola. The entire idea of bringing something that I don't have to bring, that I don't have to go ahead and do, that I want to go ahead and do. That's the idea behind it. And that'll help us to be able to understand what we're supposed to do for the rest of our lives. Until Mashiach comes, it should probably be within 3 or 4 days. I told you, it's going to be 3, 4, 5 days. Should be perfectly fine. But until then, I am really hoping this is my last Chol Mashiach, to be honest with you. I am so waiting for a Mashiach Chol Mashiach on Thursday night. I don't need this anymore. You know, like, it'll be so much more awesome. But let's stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.